You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
So now, without further ado, I'm going to turn to Martin Shiweshe, who's going to speak about an experience in... Yes, could we have the clicker, please? An experience from his home country, Zimbabwe.
Good afternoon. My name is Manasseh Shiweshe. I'm coming from Rhodes University in South Africa. What I'm going to present today is basically part of my PhD work. I recently finished my PhD. When I did my PhD, I have to be honest, when I was looking at the emerging institutions and self-help groups from new farmers who got land in Zimbabwe post-2000, I have to be honest that at that time I had not come across the social and solidarity economy concept. I was just looking at this as it were. It was only after one of my examiners told me about this concept that I began to understand or to look at this concept and how it relates to my work and what I experienced in Zimbabwe. Basically, this paper concerns itself with the emergent and evolving forms of social organization that emerged on farms post-fast-track land reform program in Zimbabwe. What happened in Zimbabwe in 2000 is that the government of Zimbabwe took a drastic step to redistribute land that was largely owned by white farmers and give it to black farmers. Many things has been written about this process, about the politicization of this process and the problems that came out of this process with President Mugabe often demonized and talked about in various ways within popular media. But my work is not concerned with the politics behind the program, as it were. My work is concerned with the farmers or the farms or the people that got that land. Because you'll find that after post-fast-track land reform in Zimbabwe, we had two models of farms, the A1 and the A2. The A1 is where around 145,773 households got land in their own right. This land averages 6 hectares, and these are small-scale farmers. So my concern is on those farmers specifically. You'll find that when land reform happened, because this program was also preceded by a violent period, often called jambanja or chaos within the local vernacular, you'll find that what came with it were many problems for the Zimbabwean economy. You'd find that due to productive sector being severely affected by the chaos and the taking away of farms, and also sanctions that came with that program from the United States of America and other European countries, the Zimbabwean economy suffered a great deal after that program. And these new farmers who got land were getting onto the land in a period where there was no financing, in a period where the state could not afford to help them settle, to help them farm. So there was very little in terms of social services and social reproduction happening on these farms from a state level. And these farmers, again, could not access credit from banks because the land that they owned remained government land, so they could not access funds. And you find that also that international and even national civil society have tended to shun these areas because they remain contested lands. How would you explain, let's take, for example, USAID working in these areas when the American government it does not recognize the land reform program? So these farmers were left, in a way, almost to their own devices. So you had a group of farmers who got land in a situation where there was rampant inflation. I think at one time we were around 1.5% inflation. We had currencies running from trillions and sextillions, and at one time I became a sextillionaire in my life, I can say that. So we had those problems happening, and we had those farmers coming into fruition under this this context. My study is concerned with a district which is not very far from Harare, around 80 kilometers from Harare, the main capital city of Zimbabwe, in a district called Mazowe. which is basically where I focus on. Why I do this or why I provide this context is because the story of land reform and the survival of these farmers post 2000 depends on the area that you talk about. There's a lot of literature that is emerged on the Zimbabwe land reform based on different case studies. So what I would not want to do is to provide a story here that speaks about the whole Zimbabwe, but specifically about this area that I'm talking about, Mazowe District, which is very near the capital city. So as I say, I use mainly qualitative methodologies to come up with the story that I'm about to tell you. What I found out is that when people were resettled or were brought onto these farms, the main initiative was done. The government was trying to beat a target of resettling people in a record time. So what happened is that many people were brought together into new communities with strangers or people they had not lived with before. So it was strange households, as Ba says, that led to a creation of many people who were neighbors or new neighbors who had not met before. But you find that in Mazowe, 39% of the settlers were from the neighboring communal areas. So they had a basis of relating to each other. But what my main interest was that when they got onto the farms, it was mainly land they found. Most of them did not have, there were no schools. Access to water was very limited. They found problems in production. And to cater for all these things, they began developing what I termed farm-level institutions. That is, they were building up institutions to come up and to develop themselves and to counter some of the challenges that they were facing. You'll find that these institutions were mainly based on the farms. I will go to a slide that describes some of the institutions that were there. For example, you find that on farms where there were dams, they began to talk about irrigation committees where people would come together. Because there was no equipment, they'll pull together resources, buy a few pipes and maybe a pump, then start irrigating. And all these committees were done to cater for the various challenges that they were facing. You also see the involvement of revolving saving clubs. You find that when the land reform happened, our currency lost a lot of value, as I said earlier, to a point that in 2009... Beginning 2009, we actually left our currency and started using the American dollar. So we are using the American dollar and the South African rand mostly, but the American dollar is the main currency of use. So you find that revolving funds before 2009 were mainly concerned with property. People would bring together, women, for example, bring together pots or groceries over a long period of time. Then they'll share this at the end of the year. But now with the coming in of the US dollar, we have now revolving funds where people are bringing in or pulling together resources or money, and each member is given after every month where the resources are pulled, and they're using this money for many different things. Then you also have got the development of what I call electricity committees. They're also trying to ensure that they have access to electricity, especially where they're irrigating. Then you also have school development committees where they are also opening new schools. And these schools also face serious challenges in terms of operating, in terms of access to books and educational materials. But these farmers are trying very much to pull resources together and to ensure that they've got access to all these issues. And also the issue of burial societies, which is important in terms of the cost of burying someone who has died, especially for these farmers, because they're also insecure about their tenure. They tend not to bury their dead on that land. So the cost involved in burying someone in another area also is very high. So the pooling of resources when it comes to burial times also becomes an important aspect. So here I just also talks about some of those issues around the use of groceries and the issue of money and the inflation, right? Now also, but what I've also found is that one of the problems with these institutions, as I call them, in terms of production and marketing, is that they remain survivalist in nature. So my work right now is involved in going back to these sites that I visited in 2007, 2008, and 2009, and seeing where the institutions are and what's happening with them. That is the work that I'm doing right now. And to see the ways in which we can ensure that they change their vision so that they have an agrarian vision and they also promote local development. rather than to remain survivalist and to respond to challenges that are there at the moment. So that is basically my work. And this workshop provides me, I think it has been very interesting for me in terms of moving forward this project and understanding how I can look at these things and how I can also assist these communities in crafting or ensuring that these processes that they're also happening in terms of at farm level also lead to development in their own spaces. Thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. If you have any suggestions for future podcasts, email us at press@unris.org. Thank you for listening.